Anybody have that friend who always falls for it? No matter what gay communist slop EA or Ubisoft or Warner Brothers churns out, he's the first piggy at the trough putting his pre-order in. Dude has never noticed a pattern in his life. Actually trusts IGN when they review a game. You talk about microtransactions and he's like, what are those? Oh, you mean when I enter my credit card number to get cat ears? Yeah, I love that. Giga Chads and Chuddas like us see this degenerate goy slop coming from a mile away and just go back to playing Stalker 2 and Factorio. But I've noticed that what the consumer cuck will often say is this, just play it for the gameplay, man. Who cares that you're playing as a black disabled girl boss? Aren't we just playing for the gameplay anyway? And what this statement reveals, I think, is that our Redditor friend simply doesn't understand how video games work. Good video games are as much about who you are as what you are doing. Think about the final hours of Red Dead 2. You formed a bond with Arthur. You came to know him and love him. Modern devs would like you to believe that you can swap out Arthur Morgan with a trans person with vitiligo because it's only the gameplay that matters, right? No. 1,000 times no. Who you are in a game is just as important as what you do. Arkham City hits so damn hard because you are Batman. Swap Batman out with Ellen Page and you have a game I'm not going to touch. Last of Us hits so hard because you are Joel. You can empathize with him because you have become him. Deathloop was such a shame because despite having really good gameplay for most of the game, it ruins it by having main characters like Juliana, who is the most annoying, shrill, harpy, leftist of a girl boss lesbian character I've met in my life. By the way, you want to talk about white man bad games? Bro, Deathloop. Every single villain in the game is white and the two good people in the game are black. Wild stuff. Anyway, so in this video, I want to talk about main characters. I want to talk about times who you play as made the gameplay better. And I want to contrast this with characters who I could not give a shit about, who I hate, who have ruined games for me. But first, I want to tell you guys about my secret to getting incredible sleep regardless of when I go to bed, and it's the Manta Pro Sleep Mask. First off, props to these guys for sponsoring my edgy content. We should all go buy a Manta sleep mask right now just because these guys have balls. But secondly, I've started using this thing pretty much every single day because it helps me fall into a deep and restful sleep. The advanced material on the sleep mask has really good ventilation and breathability, and I can easily adjust these Velcro eye cups so it fits perfectly. Every time I put this thing on, it completely blocks out light, so I don't have any need for blackout curtains. They have a couple other products, including a silk mask, a weighted mask, a Bluetooth mask that plays music, and I got to play around a little bit with these cooling eye cup masks. You just toss these bad boys in the freezer or refrigerator, and they keep my face nice and cool. If you get migraines like me, these things are a lifesaver. Be sure to use coupon code ANDYPANTS, one word, for 10% off. Okay, back to the video. When you talk about the top 5 greatest video game characters of all time, you gotta include my boy Snake. Metal Gear Solid has perhaps the perfect opening to a video game. Solid Snake is running an underwater propulsion vehicle to a hidden insertion point in Shadow Moses Island, which has been taken over by a terrorist group called Foxhound. The terrorists have taken control of a device called the Metal Gear and are threatening to launch a nuclear attack. While we watch Snake riding the SDV, we cut to Snake's mission briefing, explaining that his objective is to infiltrate Shadow Moses, rescue 2 hostages, locate the Metal Gear, and shut it down. Boom, right from the beginning, I know who I am, I know what I'm doing, and most importantly, I want to do these things. Why are modern video games so bad at the things I just described? I want to be a special forces agent who sneaks into a facility and throat punches terrorists. I want to flirt with Mei Ling on the radio while everybody listens. I want to identify Naomi Hunter's butt in a lineup. I want a whole host of gadgets to play with to take down my enemies. But don't miss this, most importantly, I want to be Snake. This is what video games ultimately are all about. I want to be the main character for a while and do the things that he does. What's so concerning about modern woke video game developers is they don't seem to understand this at all. Instead of creating characters we want to be and things we want to do, they seem dead set on creating characters we hate doing things we have no interest in. Remember that game that told me, "Let your empathy guide you"? Nah, that's gay. Now, I realize comparing any game with Metal Gear Solid is a travesty, but I think Ubisoft with Star Wars Outlaws just gave us a masterclass in how to make nobody care about a character. Did you even know her name was Kvess? See, nobody did. That's how forgettable she was. The game opens with this guy, Sliro Barsha, having a meeting of bad guys that ends with the typical cliche of killing everyone at the table. Next, we see Kay being woken up from a nap. Wild stuff. her little Merkwall friend tugs at her and, wait, no, this has to be a joke. The Wikipedia page says the Merkwall is her life partner, dear God. Y'all remember when I said female game developers are just narcissistic feminists? Yeah, this seems to be a self-insert of a depressed cat mom. Kay picks up her blaster and stands up, and the only thing you can do at this point is read data pads around the room. Again, wild gameplay. If you head downstairs, it triggers a cutscene with the bartender. Kay is down on her luck and, unsurprisingly, in need of a big score. You have a broken data spike that needs to be repaired that might lead to a job. So the first gameplay that the game has you do is wandering around the town picking up scrap to repair the data spike. I'm not even joking, y'all. This is the opening to the game. Ubisoft, if you're listening right now, I'm going to try to help you figure out why this game has 30 active players on Steam right now. Let's think really hard. We know that like 80% of AAA video game players are men, so if you're immediately throwing a woman as the main character of the game at us, you're going to need to work really hard to convince us that we want to play as this character. Nier Automata does a brilliant job of this. The intro of the game is basically a shmup, and you're flying in formation with a bunch of other ships, and the angle is changing constantly, and it's really fun. Your ship crashes into a wall, and what could emerge but a gorgeous, badass woman? That's how you start a game, boys! Platinum Games grabs you right by the balls. Ubisoft is like, hey, look, this cat mom just woke up from a nap. I was playing the intro to Force Awakens the other day. Bro, you start the game as Darth Vader, just picking dudes up and chucking them all over the place. I remember back playing this game in 2008 thinking, wow, I can't wait until 2024. It'll be just as good gameplay, but the graphics will be amazing. Now, while I do usually prefer playing as a man in a game, I want to talk about Tomb Raider 2013 because if you contextualize it well, playing as a woman can be just as fun of a game. First off, she's sexy as hell. That's important. Why would you have a woman in a game and not make her hot? Ubisoft, did you eat paint chips recently? Tomb Raider 2013 opens with a shipwreck in which Lara almost drowns, washes ashore with her crew, gets knocked out and abducted by bad guys. Wakes up in a murder den and spends the first 30 minutes of the game escaping from said murder den. It's a very compelling opening that defines Lara as a character we want to play as. Last of Us Part 1 is another masterclass in making you care about a character. Spoilers ahead, by the way. You start the game as Joel and you have a daughter. There's a zombie outbreak. In trying to flee from the zombie outbreak, your daughter dies a heartbreaking death. Fast forward a few years, Joel is more grizzled and gray and cynical. You are put in charge of another young girl named Ellie. You are tasked with taking Ellie across the country to potentially cure the world of the zombie plague, and you will be her protector the whole way. If you're a man, you immediately feel an instinctive need to protect Ellie. Your daughter is dead, but Ellie becomes a sort of surrogate daughter, and that is what the game is about. What makes the gameplay work so well is that all of it perfectly integrates into the character of Joel. The story and the gameplay mesh perfectly and play off of one another. You're in this post-apocalyptic world, so you find yourself scrounging for bullets, duct taping together weapons as zombies barrel down on you. You're a desperate man trying to survive and protect this girl. Gameplay and character are in perfect harmony. Unfortunately, now it's time to talk about the woke gay slop that was created in 2020 in the game's sequel, Last of Us Part 2. And this is an example of gameplay and character being in complete disharmony with one another. Again, spoilers ahead. Within the first 30 minutes of the game, Joel is killed by the doctor from the first game's daughter, Abby. Yeah, that's right. The man who murdered hundreds of people in the first game with his bare hands suddenly can't fight off a couple of women and pussy-ass dudes that look like the director. Neil Cuckman will never be forgiven by the PlayStation community for what he did to Joel. And it was at this point he killed any chance of me caring about this failure of a game. From this point on, you take control of Ellie, and she is basically stalking across the country trying to kill Abby for what she did to Joel. I honestly didn't mind the first half of the game. I was furious at Abby, and I was invested in seeing this ugly steroid-using lesbian get a bullet in her brain. But Neil Cuckman, being the nose that he is and being the cuck that he is, makes you play as Abby for the last 20 hours of the game. Basically, you finally get to the point where Ellie's about to kill Abby, and then the game is like, whoopsie, let's do a backstory on Abby now. You have to play as Abby, and I deleted the game at that point. This was something I simply couldn't stomach. I will never finish this game, and it's good to see that Neil Cuckman has failed as a video game designer and will probably never make another game. The last I heard, he was working on some Last of Us multiplayer mode, and it failed horribly. So do y'all hear how intense I get about this? It's because who you play as matters in a game. It matters a lot. People would say, oh, just play Last of Us 2 for the gameplay, bro. Nah, dude, never. You kill a character I love and you've killed the game. It would be one thing if some other director came in and did this to Neil Druckmann's game, but he did this to his own game, which is ridiculous. Of course, all the gay journalists and legacy media grift outlets celebrated this murder of an alpha male. 10 out of 10. Stunning and brave. So edgy. Brilliant, they said while getting pounded by their boyfriend. Let's move on to another game developer who butchered a game series because they don't understand character motivation. The Arkham games. Arkham City opens with Bruce Wayne being delivered to Arkham Jail based on fake charges trumped up by Penguin and Hugo Strange. All the idiots you spent the first game beating the crap out of are lined up to mock and jeer at you as you are slowly delivered to your cell. You feel the rage and injustice coursing inside of you, knowing that the moment you get these cuffs off, they're gonna pay. Because you're Batman, you eventually break out of your temporary holding cell, beat the crap out of Penguin, and make it to a rooftop where Alfred airdrops you your Batman suit. You look out over the city as Batman with a belt full of gadgets ready to smash faces into air conditioners and stop Hugo Strange's plan to poison the citizens of Gotham. As all good video games do, Arkham City keeps it simple. I want to be Batman. I want to control him. And I want to beat the crap out of bad guys. Secondly, it gives me a mission and a purpose. I want to save the people of Gotham. It's perfect. It's simple. Well, you will be excited to learn that Rocksteady has long since canceled any more Batman-focused Arkham games and has shifted towards live service experiences and always online games. Apparently, selling 12.5 million copies of Arkham City wasn't good enough for them. I low-key think that success might delude these studios into thinking they're better than they are, because I think Rocksteady was like, oh, we're the best, we made the Arkham games. When we do a live service game, it's obviously going to succeed. So Rocksteady seems to have forgotten how character and motivation work in 2024 when they released Suicide Squad. The game opens with Harley Quinn eulogizing the bygone days of Metropolis and talking about gentrification, code for evil white people. Wow, this is going well. What follows is like an hour-long intro where you are forced to play as all four characters in the Suicide Squad while they have meaningless, stupid banter back and forth. You have to learn each of their movesets before you can go on to the next character. Zero explanation for why you're beating up and shooting people other than, duh, it's a tutorial. The gameplay is basically like Destiny now, and all the signature melee gameplay of the Arkham games has completely disappeared. Harley Quinn, for some reason, has a grappling hook in the game, but don't worry, they did a great job of explaining it. She broke into a museum and took some of Batman's stuff. Got it. At some point, you meet Amanda Waller, the director of Argus, and you have to stop this old DC villain nobody has talked about in 100 years named Brainiac, because he's been brainwashing a lot of people, and that's bad. So even though you play as the, quote, bad guys, the Suicide Squad, you're still doing good guy stuff. Cool, makes sense. Now, you might tell me, Andy, if you don't want to play as the Suicide Squad, don't play the game. And that's a valid critique. But I'm more commenting on why Rocksteady felt that they should make a Suicide Squad game at all. And it's obviously because of brain-dead, greedy leadership. Estimates say Warner Brothers lost $200 million on Suicide Squad, and they deserve it. Oh, and to make matters worse, bro, at least give us a hot Harley Quinn. Whenever you see them making characters ugly and boxy and flat, you know the game is woke and will suck. But to bring this back to character motivation, somebody really should have asked, why would players want to play as these characters? That's the fundamental question in any video game, and clearly Rocksteady never answered it. I didn't find Deadshot, Harley Quinn, King Shark, or Captain Boomerang to be compelling characters in this game at all. I didn't want to be any of them. They just chatter on endlessly, sounding like a millennial tweeting stuff or posting fanfiction to their Tumblr page. You have the inevitable, well, that just happened, obviously written by a millennial writer when the bad guy shows up. And look, guys, calm down. I'm a millennial, so I'm allowed to make fun of us. Two additional contrasting games I want to mention are Dying Light and Deathloop. The story of Dying Light gets a lot of hate for some reason, but I found Kyle Crane to be pretty compelling. The world has been taken over by a zombie outbreak, and you are a secret agent working for the GRE. You are airdropped into the city to retrieve a document from Kadir Suleiman. Upon landing, you are attacked and bitten by zombies and wake up being nursed back to health by a group of people living in a building called the Tower. While you're helping out the people in the Tower, you realize that both you and the people around you need a medicine called Antizen to not turn into a zombie. In the midst of this, you need to keep reporting in on your progress to the shadowy GRE via a radio. Your conversations with them become darker and darker, and at one point they order you to destroy a case of Antizen, threatening the lives of the people in the Tower around you. So personally, this is one of my favorite kind of plots in video games. You're essentially a soldier on a mission. Do you obey your orders from the GRE or reject your orders and help the people around you? I could talk on and on about Dying Light, but the gameplay also perfectly integrates with the story. It did parkour better than any game ever has. It's just an amazing game from top to bottom. In contrast, Deathloop is also a first-person game that has some pretty good gameplay. But I found myself with a feeling of emptiness after playing it because the game does a really bad job of making you care about the characters you play as. First off, the game is woke as hell. The two main good characters are black, and everybody else in the game that's evil is white, of course. The game takes place on Black Reef Island in the 1960s. A group of rich white billionaire kids who are essentially spoiled brats have discovered a way on this island to make the day repeat over and over. Also, the art director, who's probably just jealous of Elon's success, said he was trying to reference Musk with these bratty billionaires. So the plot of the game involves you as Colt Vaughn going to the island and killing all seven members of the Visionaries in one perfect day and thus ending the loop. Majora's Mask did something similar where a day repeats over and over. The big problem, though, is of course, why? Why do I care about Colt? Why do I care about Juliana? Why am I killing these people? The lack of answers to why I'm doing what I'm doing create a feeling of soullessness and nihilism. Deathloop puts its concept and its gameplay so front and center that the plot and the characters of the game are nonsensical. And just as the cherry on top, the creator of the game is, wait for it, trans. So when the creator of your game isn't even sure what gender they are, it follows that they don't really understand normal human emotions and motivation either. So Deathloop joins a long list of modern games with simply terrible characters doing actions we don't care about. So guys, in closing, what can we do? How can we bring characters we care about back to video games? And I think we do it simply by playing and buying and talking about the good ones while mocking and making fun of the bad ones. Suicide Squad, Star Wars Outlaws, Unknown Nine Awakening, Dustborn, and soon Avowed. These were all games created in 2024 by the mentally ill LGBTQ crowd. These games don't understand character and motivation, and they don't understand how that feeds into good gameplay. Contrastingly, games like Space Marine 2, Black Myth Wukong, and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth understand that we don't start a game automatically caring about your characters. Your game needs to make us care about your characters, and then the game needs to provide us with gameplay that further reinforces that connection we have with your game's main characters. Star Wars Outlaws is a technical mess. Last of Us 2 was a benchmark and a technical marvel. It's not really about how much money and talent you throw at a game. It's about understanding that your game needs to create characters that we want to play as, doing things that we want to do. Arthur Morgan is a character we care about, and we get to do things as him that we want to do. Abby is an abortion of a character created from the mind of a sick and vengeful individual. And here's to hoping Neil Cuckman is forgotten and erased in gaming history. So when somebody tells you, just play it for the gameplay, man, look at that person and say, no, I don't think I will. All right, boys, I'm out.